This is Telling Tales with Ms. G, and I have a story for you tonight, and I'll give you a chance to get settled and be back with the future. We wonder how that's going to turn out. Here at KTO 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. Stay tuned. This is Ms. G. I am here at KTO 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And tonight's story is by Richard Lane. It's called Eskimo School. Andrew sat at the kitchen table staring at his bowl of gimp, spelled G-I-M-P. He picked up his spoon and stirred the stodgy gray substance. He lifted the spoon into the air and tilted it, listening to the pap, pap, plop, as gobbles of the standard-issue breakfast cereal dropped like little wet bombs back into the bowl. Andrew wanted to do anything but eat it. "Dad, do we have anything for breakfast that isn't gimp?" Andrew said. Beside Andrew hovered a newspaper, behind which Andrew's father grunted. "Don't be daft, Andy. You know we haven't got anything else. And stop calling it GIMP." "But that's what it is. It's GMP, genetically modified porridge." "Yeah, GIMP." The newspaper fell onto the table, stirring up an artificial breeze. Andrew's father glared at his son. His bloodshot brown eyes looked like scabs. "I know it's bleeding GIMP, but you have to stop calling it GIMP. Because she's banned it." "She's banned GIMP?" Andrew said with a surge of elation. "No, she's banned calling it GIMP." Andrew's father lifted up the paper, his morning copy of The Sun, and pointed at the prohibition list on page 3. "See, right at the top." Andrew scanned the contents of the square box that covered the entire page. "Tuesday, 24th, April 2035. A government issue, as of Wednesday, 25th April, the following items and acronyms are hereby prohibited from use. The acronym GIMP, G-I-M-P, in reference to genetically modified porridge. Reason, causes sexual connotations irrelevant and misleading toward the product in question. Number 2, bubble bath. Reason, can get in eyes and cause discomfort disproportional to pleasure gained from using the product in question while washing. Number 3, libido-enhancing drugs, commonly known as uppers. Reason, causes increased sex drive which renders compulsory morning intercourse session pointless. Number 4, the word short in relation to persons of below average height. Reason,
can cause discomfort in persons of below average height. The persons in question will henceforth be known as citizens under national tallness. Wonderful. The only fun I got from eating this stuff was calling it gimp. Andrew threw a spoon into the bowl, which bounced on the surface of the porridge and slid across the table until it fell with a clatter onto the red tiled floor. His father almost grinned. Andrew pushed his bowl toward the center of the table and stood from his chair. I'm not that hungry this morning. You should eat something. You've got an exam today. Besides, Nan will know you've not eaten. You'll just get double helpings at school. Yeah, well, at least I can choose what not to eat until lunchtime. Andrew's father looked up, his face suddenly serious. Careful now, that's how your brother started, except with him it was his ID card. You know what happens if you start to think like that. I know, I'll get drafted, Andrew said, speaking of ID cards. Where's Mom? In the bedroom, getting ready for intercourse. Reminds me, best take my upper. Andrew shuddered as he left the room. Sex education began in preschool, and any talk of birds and or bees had been prohibited for years. The idea was to make people complacently aware of sex from a young age and make it easier for them to casually slide into the idea of compulsory intercourse once they turned 18. But Andrew still got chills when he thought of his parents. Well, you know. Andrew had heard at school that Nan was planning prenatal genetic conditioning to solve the problem. The bedroom door was closed. Andrew could hear his mother humming behind it. He knocked tentatively on the thin plywood. Mom, can I have my ID? It's nearly time for unlocking. The humming stopped, and after a moment came the soft sound of approaching footsteps. The door opened a sliver, and in a wash of heady yellow light, Andrew's ID card was pushed through the crack. Here you go, dear, Andrew's mother said in a cheery, though slightly shaky voice. Good luck with your exam today. Thanks, Mom. See you tonight. Andrew lifted the card from his mother's grasp. As the door closed, Andrew caught a glimpse of a slender leg clad in tight black leather. It made him think of porridge. Andrew turned and headed along the corridor to the kitchen, ignoring the room on the right, halfway down that used to be his brother's. He returned to his seat and hoisted his school bag off the table. Andrew's father was washing the dishes in the sink. So you didn't notice it then, Andrew's father said without turning to face him. Notice what? The new acronym in the paper this morning? As of tomorrow, all short people are officially known as C-U-N... Uh-oh. Really? Andrew said. Yep. Make the most of it, because it'll be prohibited by Thursday. I never understood that. Why don't they just change the acronym? Make it citizens beneath national height or something. Because then the government would have to admit it made a mistake, and that just wouldn't be proper, would it? Andrew's father flicked the suds off his soggy hands and took a tea towel off the rail beside him. Is your mother ready yet? I don't know. I think so, more or less. Avoid answers like that in your exam. Be definite, but don't tell the truth. Andrew's father forced a chuckle. Then he sighed. I'd best go see your mom then. She tries her best, bless her. But if that sodding camera screeches faster like it did yesterday, I'm going to snap the thing off its hinges. When your mother and I were younger, we would do it whenever we wanted. And we were never shouted at by some pervert at public health and fitness who sounds like Hitler on helium. So I've been told, Andrew said. Andrew's father turned and placed a hand on his son's shoulder. Good luck today. Maybe you can get a scholarship, and then you can get out of here. And if you see your brother, say hi to him for me. Will do, Dad. An alarm sounded for somewhere in the depths of the complex, and there was a synchronized grating sound as every apartment in the block was unlocked. Andrew's father watched his son leave and listened for the second alarm as the doors relocked themselves. Then he took a small red pill from his pocket, placed it in his mouth, and swallowed. Would all pedestrians keep to the left side of the pavement in order to prevent jostling? Thank you. The footpath was crowded, as it was every morning. Overhead speakers blared Nan's exuberant voice through the shuffling monochrome throng of screw children below. Andrew watched his feet carefully, avoiding treading on the back of anyone's shoes. Occasionally, he glanced at the gaps between the rows of tower blocks that lined the street, trying to remember which one housed the little stone building with the sharp sloping roof and the singular corner turret, one of the last of the old buildings that remained in the wake of Nan's Edinburgh renovation project. He giggled quietly at the acronym NERP. He didn't know precisely why. It was just something to giggle at. "What's so funny?" Adele asked. "Nothing," Andrew replied. "Were you thinking about walking on the right side of the pavement?" "No." "Oh, well, I was. Wouldn't it be brilliant to walk on the right side of the pavement?" Andrew gazed at Adele. "You know that's a draftable offense." "Yeah, but if you only did it for a second, nobody would know." Andrew sighed. Adele always talked about breaking the rules, but he never did. He was too smart. He was waiting for a scholarship, when he would be sent as a missionary to other countries, with the handbook of decency and moral correctness clasped in his palm. Unsurprisingly, most missionaries never came back, and it was rumored that Nan was planning to close that little loophole, the last escape from New Britain. A tram shot past on the rails beside the pavement, an endless white streak of wheels and carriages. Sometimes Andrew thought about taking the tram to school, but they were even more crowded than the pavements were, especially since the prohibition of private transport 3 years back. The blare of Nan's voice sounded again, only this time her shrill vocals sounded tinnier. Andrew glanced up and saw that this time Nan's voice came not from speakers, but a giant LCD screen on the side of a nearby residential complex. The rusty-haired old woman was chattering on about the nutritional benefits of the GMP breakfast. Andrew wondered if people listened any more, whether they had in the first place. He remembered something his father had said about Nan. "Proper morals for a proper Briton? Ha! More like a tea cozy for every building and a lobotomy for anyone who says otherwise." "What question are you going to do?" Adele asked. "What?" "The exam. What question are you going to do?" Andrew shrugged. "Don't know. If there's one on private transport, I might do that." "I'm going to do the one on ID cards," Adele said excitedly. "Did you know that ID cards were introduced before Nan's New Britain?" "No," Andrew said, still watching for the gap in which the stone house sat. "Well, they did. Nobody knows precisely why the cards were introduced. Some say it was to prevent identity theft. But that's just stupid, because having everyone's personal information on one database actually makes it easier for people to steal it." "I thought it was to help stop terrorism," Adele crackled. "That's the answer Nan wants us to give, but think about it. In the past 30 years, there's only been a single terrorist attack on Britain, way back in 2005. Now, compare that with the myriad of bombings by the Provisional IRA during the late 20th century. There was no talk of ID cards then, was there? Terrorism is an excuse. But I think..." "Wasn't there a stone building between those two complexes?" Andrew interjected, pointing to an empty patch of dry, dusty earth in a gap between two tower blocks. "They demolished it yesterday afternoon. As I was saying, I think the real reason is simple. Money. Everyone got charged £100 for their card, a quick tax boost. But Nan saw greater potential than monetary gain. When she came to power, she made sure people had to swipe their ID card whenever they bought anything or entered a building. As such, she could keep tabs on everyone virtually all the time. Basically, an ID card is an electronic tag. That's why if you lose it, you lose your status as a human being. Nan doesn't want people she can't keep an eye on." "Sounds like you know your stuff," Andrew said absently. "If you leave all of that out, you're a shoo-in for a scholarship," Adele sniffed. "That's if I don't get drafted first." For the first time since Andrew had met up with him at the bottom floor of the complex, Adele caught his attention. "Why would you get drafted?" "No reason. Well, it's just Dad's been having a bit of a bother from the Department of Immigration." "But you're not an immigrant, are you?" "Well, I'm not. But Dad was a band... Andrew said sharply. "Sorry,
illegal immigrant. He arrived before they introduced ID cards, and we could be up for a drafting. They do it by families for double I's. But why? Like Nan said, illegal is illegal, the law is the law. I thought there was an amnesty declared for double I's who passed the citizenship and the patriot test. There was, and Dad passed both. So why? How the hell should I know? Probably a glitch in the database or somebody's not filled it in properly. I heard that around 50,000 people were incorrectly drafted last year, most of them whom were double I's who had passed the CNP test. I reckon it's to do with draft shortages. Fewer people are breaking the rules, so they have to come up with new ways to haul people in. And nobody's going to get upset for a few double I's go missing, are they? They came to the end of the long street of complexes and turned left into Education Plaza. In the center of a square half mile, long stood what looked like a giant igloo made entirely of glass. The square was filled with children filing slowly towards the building, known as Edinburgh Central School, or ECS for short. Eskimo School, Andrew thought. The nickname had been prohibited last year. Between the school and the children was a line of turnstiles that stretched across the entire square. Each turnstile was manned by a policeman, one of whom spotted Andrew in the crowd and waved maniacally at him. Andrew considered avoiding his brother, but he remembered his father's request and reluctantly headed for the turnstile his brother was manning. Andrew's brother was clothed in the Metropolitan Police uniform, navy blue in color. It was a single bodysuit with Kevlar protecting the chest, neck, stomach, and groin. His head was shielded by a helmet with a reinforced plexiglass visor that could not be flipped up. Defensive weaponry included a baton and a taser. Most policemen also carried sidearms, though Nan had deemed them unnecessary for those who monitored the schools. "Hello, Andrew," Andrew's brother said jovially as Andrew approached the turnstile. "Hi, Mike. How's things?" "Oh, same as always. How are our beloved parents?" "They're fine, Mike. Dad says hi." Mike grinned. It was a grin that had been genetically coded into his brain to be produced whenever casual communication was necessary. But the expression failed to reach his eyes. They remained dead, stagnated pools of brown ooze. Andrew barely remembered when those eyes had carried life, before Mike had cut up his ID card with 2,000 other students in a mass protest. They were all amongst the first to be drafted. Nan didn't kill or imprison her opponents. She simply took care of them. "How kind of our father," Mike said. "I shall return the favor when I next see him." "That's grand, Mike." Andrew removed his ID card from his pocket and passed it briskly over the sensor on the turnstile. The light flickered green and Andrew walked through. "Same time tomorrow, eh?" Mike nodded. "Have a good day, Andrew." Andrew gave Mike a quick wave, then turned and headed towards the school. He had taken no more than 5 steps when an alarm sounded behind him. Andrew whirled around. Adil stood looking bemused at his ID card while Mike loomed over him. The stupid smile on his face had died completely. "I don't understand. It was working yesterday," Adil whimpered. "Your ID card has been deactivated," Mike said in a low monotone. "You are subject to evaluation for drafting. Please return to your home and await further instructions." "I can't go home. The exam is today." "Please return to your home and await further instructions." "I can't. Please, Mike, it's a mistake. Just let me through." "Any attempt to pass these barriers will be met by force. You have been warned. Please return to your home and await further instructions." Andrew watched his brother repeating the phrase over and over, waiting 5 seconds for Adil to comply, and then issuing same standard response for anyone newly subject to drafting. Andrew was 4 when Mike had been drafted, and had hardly known his brother as anything but an organic computer. He was no longer sure what color Mike's hair was. It was always hidden beneath that bulbous policeman's helmet. Andrew looked at Adil, shivering with fear, tears swelling behind his eyes like bruises, and he knew he had to do something, even though in truth he couldn't do anything. "Adil, just go. If you stay, you're going to get hurt." Adil shook his head. "I'm not going anywhere. I'm not being turned into one of those things." "Please, Adil, go somewhere, anywhere, just away from here." "Where can I go? I can't escape. I can't hide."
They'll find me. They always do. No, Andrew, I'm taking this exam. Adele stepped up to the turnstile, and Mike lifted his baton. It was a moment before Andrew realized he was rushing forward. He reached across the turnstile and thrust his open palm into Adele's shoulder. Adele stumbled backwards, and Mike's baton swung down onto Andrew's forearm. There was a noise like an edge of a spoon hitting an eggshell, and an eruption of pain shuddering through Andrew's arm. Dizziness and nausea swept him up, and for a moment his mind blanked. When the world returned to focus, Andrew found himself sat cross-legged on the ground, hunched over, cradling his shattered arm. He lifted his head, and through the pain and the sickness, he thought he saw Adele flit across his vision and vanish into the mass of schoolchildren. Though it could equally have been one of many dark spots that fluttered before his eyes like giant blue bottles. Mike stepped through the turnstile and loomed over Andrew. He looked confused, like a young child who sees his parents sobbing through an ajar door. Then a smile illuminated his face as if everything suddenly made sense. "You can go in now," he said brightly. "Have a nice day." That was Richard Lane's Eskimo School. The future. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales here at KTL 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. Stay tuned. Thank you.
hello there. This is Ms. G, still here at Telling Tale, giving Telling Tales tonight at KTO 104.3. And I wanted to find a poem for this week. And I think I found a good one, especially considering it was Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday yesterday. It's titled Superheroes. When you plan to succeed, your goals can only be manifested by your actions, and the energy vested can easily control outcome. The fact is that there's no time to waste because there's too much to do. Too many people to save and not enough people to accept that they need the help, but would prefer to believe that they have superhero tendencies, neglecting the reality that no one is invincible and protection is needed. It's up to us to show that the light and help them to take heed to the vision, to open their ears to listen to ways to ensure better lives for their families after their lives have ceased, ways to guarantee their loved ones some peace of mind. See, know, and understand that we are the X-Men and Fab Five of this industry. It is us that have the keys to change people's lives so that we can only find it in an injustice when we don't put our capes on and leave everything on the table before the bell has rang. Paint the picture as vividly as you can. Why wait? Why wait for your victory to fall in your lap when it's already at your fingertips, tipping towards your canvas like a paintbrush? Push towards your prosperity as hard as you can with all of your might, because at the end of the night, what we do makes a difference. It was written by Poetis Elitis. It's titled Superheroes. And that's it for me tonight. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales here at KTO 104.3. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Until next time, good night.